This is Jennifer Lawrence from Old Chatham, and you are listening to WGXC Accra, 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now. WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Science of Aesthetics Laser and Med Spa, offering a wide variety of multifaceted cosmetic services at 810 Union Street in Hudson. Consultations are available. Information at 518-697-5390 and scienceofaesthetics.net.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to Radio Survivor. We're here for the love of radio and sound. My name is Paul Rees-Mandel.
My name
is Jennifer Waits.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. That's fine. We'll keep it. My name is Eric Klein. We're also here for the love of sound of strong communities.
Indeed, we are here. And so today we're going to talk about an interesting radio station and radio show coming out of Troy, New York at WOOC-LP, which is housed at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. They have a daily hour-long news and public affairs show produced by volunteers. And that's hard to pull off. Anyone who's been in community radio knows that's no mean feat to pull off a daily news and public affairs show staffed by volunteers. And we learned about
it. That covers local issues, that brings local voices onto the radio, that really does the work that community radio is there to do, to bring these people out into the airwaves, onto people's ears. So that they can hear people from their community talking about issues that they care about.
Indeed. So
with multiple pieces every day, too, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of mind-boggling to me, actually, that they're able to do it. It's quite a lot of content that's produced every week.
Yeah.
So we learned about this, and so we wanted to learn more. And it turns out, of course, we already know WOOC. The station carries Radio Survivor. And so I reached out to Steve Pierce, who is executive director of the Media Alliance, which operates the station.
And it's worth mentioning that, like, what Steve has accomplished and what this radio program, this magazine show that all of these volunteers have accomplished, it's a real important story in the spectrum of low power radio that we here at Radio Survivor are covering. It's a unique moment in the history of how radio is made in this country. And what they're doing there at WOOC in Troy, New York, is a great exemplar of what a low power, a small radio station with a budget of almost zero can accomplish for its community.
They do it in a particular way. And I think that they structured themselves and they operate in a way that may differ from a lot of low power stations and stations that are looking for possible alternatives or different ways that they could go about the business of being a community radio station might find some inspiration or some hints here. And that is another reason why we're sharing this story. We're on the line from Troy, New York, with Steve Pierce. He's the executive director of Media Alliance, which owns and operates the Sanctuary for Independent Media there in Troy, and also WOOCLP. And we brought Steve on to talk about their independent news magazine program, daily news program that they broadcast on WOOC, the community radio station there in Troy. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
My pleasure. I love the show.
And I'll admit, I just learned about the Hudson Mohawk magazine, your daily news program, because there was a nice write-up about it in the Nieman Lab reports. And the Nieman Lab is a journalism organization out of Harvard University.
Right.
And they publish a lot of nice little studies. And
They promote the idea that that journalism has a place in this world. We just have to figure out what it's going to be at some point.
Indeed.
As the industry goes through its shifting
economics. Tides. Yeah. And it caught my attention immediately because, you know, I know that many low power FM stations struggle with being able to provide regular news and public affairs programming, especially stuff that's produced locally to their audiences. And I saw, wow, okay, here's a station that's doing it. Plus, WOOC already knew about you because you carry Radio Survivor program. You're an affiliate. So, Steve, can you tell us more about this show? What is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine?
Well, it's called the Hudson Mohawk Magazine because we are on the about a block away from the Hudson River, the nation's largest Superfund site. And it collides with the Mohawk River, which goes west towards the Great Lakes, not far from here. And so we're the Hudson Mohawk Magazine because that's the geographic and environmental location that we're in. We serve Schenectady, Albany, and Troy. The magazine is a daily show run by volunteers that covers all different kinds of things, anything that you might want to know, particularly that's local, either because it happened here or because it affects people here or it's related to people here in some way. And so that's, in a nutshell, what it is, an hour a night of news and public affairs, which we also stream and share with a couple other stations here and then put on SoundCloud and on our website and then put on social media. Not the whole show, although we do put the whole show on. We also put the segments on so that they're shareable via the newfangled interweb.
Yeah, I noticed that you did that, and I was curious why you both have the full show and also you're distributing the segments, and as a podcast feed, because I saw it available in Apple Podcasts.
Well, the reason is that the people who are on the show are the most motivated to share it. And so, you know, if you came in and you did a piece on sailboat racing miniatures on the Hudson and had a 10-minute segment about whatever it is you do, you might want to get that file and share it on your own Facebook page with your friends, but maybe not too motivated if it's a 59-minute show that's big and you have to tell people to start listening at 33 minutes in. So we make it available as an independent podcast, and we're pretty careful to make sure that there's a good photo of either the interviewee or the, you know, whatever it's about. As soon as people get interviewed, we send them a link to the file, and we hope that they send it on its merry way out into the universe so that all the folks that they know will find out about what they do, but also will find out about what we do.
How many segments do you typically have in a show?
We do 5 10-minute segments a day.
5 or 10-minute segments a day, Steve Pierce at WOOC Low Power FM in Troy, New York. I know from experience that producing this kind of radio, producing this kind of information is it's a huge lift. It's a job for a team of people working long hours. How do you accomplish this with a volunteer staff?
Well, we don't do 5 or 10-minute segments. We do 5 10-minute segments. And so the idea is that, you know, almost anything is interesting for, you know, 10 minutes, even if you don't really care that much about it. That's probably exaggerating a little bit in the current attention span era, but I mean, that's, you know, we basically thought that. We started by doing 4 15-minute segments, and we found that, first of all, 15 minutes was too much for most things, and also that we didn't have enough time for all the content that we had.
Let me jump in and ask a follow-up question then. Like, who decides what's interesting? Because I think that's a very important – I mean, you made what I think was a joke. It might have been had a kernel of truth, a joke about miniature sailboat racing on the Hudson, but – I tuned into your podcast. I know that I heard some really heavy news and information stories that had a lot more to do with people's daily lived experiences than the wonderful hobby of sailboat racing. So who decides what's going on these airwaves?
Well, so that's an interesting question. I mean, the people who are the producers are deciding. It's a loose collective of folks. I'll answer your first question first, because it kind of leads to that, but now you're going to have to remind me of the second question because I'm old. The way we get volunteers to do it is to try to figure out the most decentralized way possible to organize it. And we had a group of folks who worked on the concept for the show for a long time, trying to figure out how best to organize it so that it didn't require paid staff. Now, I'm paid staff here at the Sanctuary, and I have radio experience as a freelancer for NPR and Pacifica Radio, and so I've done it, and I know how to do it. I used to think I knew all about it, but what I realized was I knew all about it, or I knew a lot about it, back in the old days. It's all different now, and so it's been an incredible learning curve for me to figure out how all the new technology works and how you adjust for the fact that most people, or a lot of people, aren't hearing you in a radio anymore, or if they are, it's probably in a car or drive time, most likely. But anyway, so the idea was to figure out how do you get something in motion that doesn't require a whole lot of maintenance.
Yeah. And when you say something, staff. You're talking about a radio program that is produced by volunteers, just in case someone's dropping in on the radio.
Yeah, well, because, you know, when you talk about volunteers in public radio, a lot of times you're talking about an NPR station that has volunteers answering the phones during pledge drives. And that's a whole lot different than a decentralized staff of people who are motivated and empowered to create their own content.
Yeah.
And so the first thing, though, that we do is we have a weekly producer meeting every Monday from 7:07 until however long it takes to schedule the next week of programming. And we have a Google spreadsheet that has a grid with 5 days a week and 5 segments a day and slots for 2 hosts and an engineer and a helper. And that becomes the basis for deciding what goes on the show. And people come to the station on Monday nights at 7:07, and we sit around and talk about who's got what ideas. And for the most part, anybody who has an idea and who can pull it off can do it. And the only real filter, the only litmus test, is the organizational mission, which is that we use media for social justice and environmental justice purposes. And so if there was ever a conflict about content, we might just say, you know, the station is licensed to us and we're not really in the, you know, the Rush Limbaugh game. It really has to be something that's in line with our mission. But we surprisingly haven't had too much trouble with folks who are producing content that we don't think is worth sharing, even though a lot of it is stuff that I don't personally agree with. I sort of compare it to a neighborhood or a community Facebook page that we have here in Troy. It's the Troy Neighborhood Action Coalition. Mm-hmm. And anybody posts anything about whatever's going on. And in an era where there's almost no news coverage of things that are happening at the neighborhood level, it's the only way you can find out about, you know, why was that police car racing down the street at 4 o'clock in the morning yesterday? Somebody knows why, and they'll post about it. And, you know, so it was kind of an interesting thing where you'd go, wow, there's a whole network of people who are following whatever interests them. And they're sharing it on this page, and you can find out about it, and you basically learn what people's biases are, and you decide what to believe and not to believe, but at least you know that it's happening.
Well, it sounds to me, and I think we should get into it maybe later in the conversation, that what you have there at WOOCLP in Troy, New York, is a really – you're very lucky, it sounds like, that you have a lot of people that are dying to produce radio, that have come ready to create this content for your station and probably know what they're doing already with microphones, it sounds like.
Well, I'm really curious to know.
Okay,
I mean, how do people come into the station? How do you recruit and how do you train them?
Not very well. first of all, most people don't know how to do radio. Most people who know anything about radio went to a college where there was a college radio station. And so that's a fairly select group of people compared to, you know, the universe. And we don't really see too many folks like that. So we're building on a base that we've been developing for almost 15 years now. We moved into this neighborhood in 2005, and the radio station started in 2016. So in that previous period, we've been developing the infrastructure here of an old church that we call the Sanctuary for Independent Media. And there's a performance space, and there's editing facilities, and, you know, it's a place, it's a physical location. And we've had people coming here for a long time. So some people know about us already. The radio station has proven to be a huge recruiting tool for volunteers, both getting people in and also getting them to stay, because they get to be creative and do cool things. But most of the people who come in don't know anything about audio, and many of them don't know anything at all about computers. And so that's one of the reasons they stay. I mean, they get to do really interesting stuff with technology that they've never touched before. And they can hear it on the radio, and they can hear it on the internet.
That's really great. So your Sanctuary for Independent Media, your low-power FM station, makes spaces for volunteers to do this work.
Well,
like,
I mean,
physically, you have physical, you know, you've opened the doors to them. They can come in off the street. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, yeah, but, you know, so we've had to be open more than we used to be open. There wasn't much reason for people to come here. It wasn't like a public access center or something. Although we have equipment, it wasn't really set up that way, though. We didn't have a mandate to be open to anyone for anything.
Yeah.
So we were open when we had events and all that. Now that we have a daily news show, it actually created some, you know, in spite of our efforts to reduce the impact on the host organization, we're open now from 1 till 8 every weekday because the show is on from 6 to 7, and we have to be here for people to come in and do their interviews and all that.
So this, I'm sure this news magazine sounds like it sort of has injected a lot of new energy and volunteer work into the station for good and for complications. Jennifer, you had a question.
Well, is that what is luring? Because you mentioned that most people are coming in without audio backgrounds, so I'm curious then, what is luring them to come volunteer at a radio station? Is it that they're hearing the magazine show? What is kind of setting them in motion to try their hand at audio when they've never done it before?
Well, a lot of times what we're finding is the radio station. We didn't really know what we were going to do with the radio station when we applied for it. I was a media activist for a long time before this, and had worked with Prometheus Radio Project in the early days of LPFM. So I've been passionate about LPFM. But when we got ours, we thought, oh, my God, you know, I actually remember when the application window opened thinking, do I really want a radio station? What would I do with it? Or, you know, what would we do with it? And I thought, you know what? We're probably not going to get it anyway, so let's just apply for it and worry about it later. And shazam, you know, we got a radio station. And for the first while that we were on the air, we were running an automated mix of music that I own. I have a huge world music and reggae collection. And I thought, well, you know, this is cool. I mean, this is stuff that nobody else is airing. So even though it's not the most compelling radio in the world, it's great music.
Yeah. And maybe it's just time for you to tell us a little bit about what's going on in Troy, New York, for listeners outside of the region. What was the media landscape like in the town in which you're located?
Oh, it's like everybody else's media landscape. You know, it's corporate journalism, such that it is, and chain, you know, broadcasters, television stations, radios, consolidation, you know, all that. A shrinking world view.
Do you have much in the way of like community or say college radio available to you there?
I went to college. I went to grad school at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, and they have venerable student-run radio station, which I was very active in as a grad student. There's also a great station at the University of Albany. It's actually a 100-watt station, but they get a much higher antenna height in the class that they're in, so you can hear that all around. And you know, there's a bunch of good college radio stations. There's an NPR station that has many, many, many repeaters. It covers the whole Northeast. Mm-hmm. And it is what it is. It's an NPR station, and people love it. Some people love it. But the problem that they have is that because they have so many repeaters everywhere, they can't be local to anyone.
Right.
So they have like a Great Barrington, Massachusetts bureau, and a bureau here and a bureau there. But because they're covering so much territory, the bureaus are only, you know, generating like one story a day. It's almost a pro forma model of coverage. And other than that, there's a classical music NPR station that doesn't do much. And then the vast, undifferentiated sea of corporate crap that that we know as radio today, destroyed by Clear Channel here as everywhere.
So is it fair to say then that there hasn't been much in the way of local news coverage, particularly on the radio, prior to you putting WOOC on the air?
Well, I don't know, because I would hesitate to say that, because maybe at some time and place there was more local radio news.
But I'm talking about now.
But certainly
I'm talking
not
about,
recently.
Yeah. I'm talking about when you put it on the air in the preceding decade, post 1996 Telecommunications Act era.
Right. Yeah. No, there's nobody does it. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
To pay people, which is and we know that already. We knew that coming in. It's like, okay, we can't afford to pay for this. So how are we going to motivate people to do this on a volunteer basis? And so one thing was to say, okay, first of all, let's be clear about what we're doing and what we're not doing. We are providing activist-oriented local news that shares the work of people around the region with other people in the region. That's what we're doing. It's not like we always have that on the radio, but that's our goal. And that we want to... we want to be open to different points of view and perspectives and all that, but we want to be true to who we are. We're activists. We are looking for a channel for social justice information and culture. We use it a lot ourselves. We interview artists who are coming here. Dar Jamal was interviewed here on the radio station. We have people, we have our own staff people talking about what we're doing. It's, it could sound a little bit like an internal communication mechanism,
right? Because
times.
You're attached to this media center, which holds events and talks and things as well. So you have multiple kind of places for people to gather there.
Right. And it's very unlikely. There's this traditional model. I don't know traditional, but a popular model of low power FM or community radio, where it's like public access radio, which I decided early on is not viable in the 100-watt. Contemporary media environment. There's just not enough people who are willing to listen to anything that happens to come on the air within the coverage range that we have. There has to be more of a focal point. And so, I started to tell you, we started with a world music format 24/7, and a lot of people noticed and said, hey, this is cool. We've never heard anything like this on the radio. And I thought, okay, we'll score one for us. It's not costing us anything, and it's pretty easy to do. And we're having some impact, although not as much as I'd like. And we started thinking after a couple of years, we wanted to do news, we wanted to do more, but, we're not trying to do 24/7 news or anything like that. We're just doing 1 hour a day, which is huge, as you noted earlier. Yeah. And we were set about trying to figure out how we could do that and how we could make it sustainable. And also why we're doing it, because it really is, it's as much about getting out news and information about what's happening here as it is about bringing people from the community into our radio station. What we found, almost by accident, although I think we knew somewhere in the back of our minds that this would be a powerful development tool. If you were to call somebody up at an organization and say, hey, would you mind driving over here and come talk to us for a little while about how you could help us with what we're doing? They'd say, no, we're busy. We're not doing that. But if you call them up and say, would you like to come over and talk about what you're doing there? Anybody would come and do that.
They come and talk about it on the radio,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And they come here and they go, oh, wow, this is a cool place. How long have you been here? We never heard of you. It becomes this incredible outreach tool because it's based on the self-interest of the people who you're trying to involve.
Right.
And we have to be careful about who you invite in because of that organizing principle. But we found that also works for volunteers. So the people who come in here and do radio segments do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And so we have people who are interested in environmental programming, and we have people who are interested in labor, and we have people who are interested in food and, organic gardening or whatever it is. And they come in and they do what they're interested in, and we put it on the radio.
And that voice you heard is Steve Pierce. He is executive director of the Media Alliance, which owns and operates a sanctuary for independent media in Troy, New York, and low-power community radio station WOOC there. And we're talking about the station's daily news and public affairs program, Hudson Mohawk Magazine. This is Radio Survivor. My name is Paul Rees-Mandel, and I'm joined by Eric Klein and by Jennifer Waits. Jennifer, you had a question.
You were talking about how inviting people in to be guests is often, in a way, a recruiting tool. So is that one of the primary ways that people have come to join your station, by simply being invited in? Or what are the other reasons you know, like I had asked earlier, you have a lot of folks who didn't have any sort of audio background. So what's motivating them to join the station?
Well, definitely some of them come in because they were asked in to be interviewed and they say, wow, this is cool. I'd like to be a part of it. It's a great culture that we have here. The diversity of it ebbs and flows, but it's much more diverse than the general population would suggest. And so there's lots of older people. There's lots of young people, college kids, just regular folks, black, white. You know, it's diverse. And so it's pretty much fun. There's not a whole lot of the squabbling that you get sometimes in diverse environments. So, you know, people have come in because they enjoyed being on the air and they thought, you know, that it might be useful for them, either creatively or because they have something that they want to do. I don't know exactly where the others come in. One of our regular hosts goes out and does motivational speaking. Has become kind of his radio segment has helped him become more successful. As you know, he's helping him get the word out about what he does. And so when he goes places, he talks about what he's doing. And you know, we just had a kid come in last night who was in the class that there was a discussion about us, and he decided to come here, and he's going to become an intern. We have a lot of interns. That's been growing. We have about 50 or 75 people who are involved with the news program. It's by far the largest core group of volunteers that we have here. And the news show becomes an organizing principle around which it all revolves. Mm-hmm.
That's a large number even for a non-low power FM radio station. That's a healthy amount of volunteer radio producers for a 1 hour a day program. Kudos.
They're not all active. I mean, there are people who, you know, come in occasionally, who used to come and don't anymore, but still identify with us. You know, there's two groups of, you had asked me earlier about how we organize things, how the editorial decisions are made. And as I said, we don't really, it's not like there's a editorial board that decides what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. It's basically a very loose initiation where you come to one of these meetings to see what's going on and hear how the editorial process such that it is like, oh my God, we have a hole in the show tomorrow. What are we going to put in? And we have three holes on Thursday, and you know, and it's like we're plugging stuff in. And if people want to produce something, and it doesn't sound like a terrible idea to most people, you know, it's in a strange development state where there's not so much pressure on it from people wanting to get in that hard decisions have to be made.
Well, it sounds to me like showing up on Monday evening is the prerequisite for being an editor.
Well, that's actually become the entry point for everyone who wants to do anything with us, because it's our only standing meeting. It's, you know, we have to do it every week, because if we didn't, we wouldn't know what we were doing that week. And so anybody who comes here who wants to get involved with anything, we say, come to the meeting at 7:07 on Monday. You'll meet a lot of people. You'll learn about the radio station. The great thing about radio and the news show, radio in general and the news show in particular, is that there are so many different things to do. You can do social media, you can do engineering, you can do PR, you can do, you know, whatever. And then even beyond that, if you look at it from the content perspective, there is an endless amount of subjects to be covered. So if anyone is interested in anything, they can participate. So that's a pretty wide net. But also it serves, you know, we're just about to hire a volunteer coordinator because of the demand on us. And what I learned in my years in community radio is the stations that don't have volunteer coordinators or somebody whose job it is to be nice to people and find out why they're there and why they're not coming anymore or whatever, you get a lot of type A personalities who don't need the care and feeding. And that's great. You know, a lot of my friends I met that way, but it's not ideal. I mean, you really would rather have an environment where somebody's noticing and appreciating and helping people who are coming in.
Yeah, you don't want to exclude the shy. You know, by default.
You know, Steve, I wanted to follow up on a point you made about sort of programming philosophy. You sort of said in passing that you didn't think that